Consider this question, question 28, if you want to know what it is, and it's worth 6 marks. And it says, contrast the design of transformers and magnetic braking systems in terms of the effects that the eddy currents have in these devices. So I want you to consider it. In 2017, some 7,000 New South Wales students in Australia considered this in their final year examination at school, having studied physics. And now I'm going to, this is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. I'm going to discuss the actual answer of this, but through the lens of different answering methodologies, and go back to say, well, what is the value of answering methodologies, and how should we approach them? Should we take them as a central plank to go through, or just a resource that which we can go back to? So the answering methodology, which I said first, was the ALARM method. It's called a learning and response matrix. The A is for and A is for also AND in this one. In fact, it's, as we've discussed previously, not a matrix. It's essentially the a system devised by a teacher called Max Woods in Freshwater High a couple of years ago, and when he had students struggling and didn't had no structure whatsoever, this initial structure produced a increase in results, and through the process, sort of internal academic world, this has been handed from high school to high school. And sort of my critique of it, and I'm going to mention my critique of it, is that it's not been tested by control tests, not been analysed psychometrically by universities. The standard sort of tests that educational academics do apply to it, so it's arrived from it. So the education alternative strategy, which I'll talk about in this podcast, is similarly like that. I call it ROSA, reverse order synthetic answer. And unfortunately, unlike matrix, ROSA stands for what exactly it does. It's a synthetic answer by reversing the order which you attack the question. You attack the question from the end of the question and slowly work back to the beginning. It's a generalized strategy. It doesn't always work, but it's a good way to get going. It's got different characteristics, but it shares with matrix. It's something which hasn't been tested, and that's not to say that I haven't tried to test it. I've tried to set up tests for it, a double-blind test where people don't know the name of the strategy that they're teaching, and we don't know the strategy that they've used to answer the question. Then you mark the question afterwards and find similar to a drug trial, so to speak. But that type of thing, I haven't been able to get it up and going. And I'll give an overall description. So I've been a HSC examiner for three years until internal politics have said, oh, look, we don't want you to be, this is not the examination committees or the schools, but the local school politics have said, look, we don't want you to be an examiner. It's too difficult for us to cope. Not that it's ever been explained to me. I've just applied and it's been knocked back. You can't be an examiner. But I have been in examination halls and actually seen thousands of scripts and seen which strategies have been used, how the examiners have handled them, or have been able to go around producing stereotypical answers in both or in various answering methodologies, and see the examiner's response to it, having actually produced it myself to see how the marks actually flow. So I've tried to do some professional research, but I haven't been able to do it. And we're up at this point in cardiac rehab, where I have to start teaching again cold. And this is one of the things I realised last time. So I've had a checkered history of heart valve operation. It went well, but not quite well. The heart valve was leaking, so I was thrown back into school and immediately teaching and tested on teaching without the cognitive build-up, and sort of like bus driving or, I don't know, surgery or anything like that, after a break or something like that, there's a lot of current knowledge or practice which is from experience a day ago, a week ago, a month ago, which sort of just folds out. And if that hasn't there, you're very much aware of it. So this time I've decided to do cardiac rehab. And part of cardiac rehab is going into these questions. And normally I wouldn't... I'd be very careful as a scientist not to actually discuss any of my private theories. I'd actually put it through a proper peer review system. In fact, when I come across questions, I write a research paper, send it out for peer assessment and get some feedback to it. And sometimes, most of the time, I actually don't publish it at the end of the day, because there's no pressure for publication. But it's a more systematic, balanced way of doing it. So that just gives an example that I erred on the side of caution. But let's get back to this question. I'll read it again. Contrast the design of transformers and magnetic braking systems in terms of the effect that eddy currents have in these devices. This is not the answer, but this is just to brief you in. If you're listening in, a transformer is basically an electrically powered electricity generator. That is, rather than a motor turning, a changing variable magnetic field over a coil. A magnetic field changes the magnetic field in a coil, pickup coil. And there's a coupling between iron core or ferrite. And these are designed such that it doesn't have parasitic currents. It only transfers magnetic but not electrical energies. It refers in a response in a magnetic form and not an electric form. Magnetic braking systems, we'll just have a quick thing. And this is one of the things that I would write in a long research paper describing. So the academics who are trying to comment on it can, or the actual professional physicists looking at it, will understand that this group of people are only looking at a particular type of magnetic braking system. So the magnetic braking system they talk about at schools is a magnet which sits above a railway track and switches on, and it causes a magnetic current in a railway track. Now, in fact, this is a fictional thing. I don't think actually there's any such device there, but the closest magnetic braking system that people would have experience of is an exercise bike, in which you roll up magnets close to an aluminium disc, and as that aluminium disc spins, the other sort of common example is the aluminium coil and a moving coil galvanometer. But in this case, the education system believes that this is not the case, that the core of an aluminium galvanometer, it's not aluminium but in fact iron, for some reason that slipped in. Of course, magnetic braking is essential in a slightly different form, in that magnetic braking is actually used in a different form called regenerative braking in the Tesla electric cars. Just to give a break. And in terms of the effects of the eddy currents have in these devices. So let's take off the premier way that the majority of students are taught in physics, using the official alarm system. The alarm system works on the Bloom's taxonomy, a shard of the actual Bloom's work, which has come through, has met the parallel with social psychology. There's the Maslow effect of hierarchy. You have to develop one hierarchy to go to the next, to go to the next in the Maslow theory. So the Maslow theory is essentially a theory of needs, that you have to have your basic needs, that if you're hungry and you're cold, you're not going to be interested in the higher needs of self-actualization. So there's a mechanism in the Maslow hierarchy, and that's been transferred without question to the Bloom's taxonomy, which starts off with identify, describe, explain, analyze, critique, synthesize, going up. And so Bloom's had several scales or taxonomy. Taxonomy means a word system, a word lookup chart, where you look at something and you say it's that. Now, there's sort of a suggestion that you have to actually work through these layers to get to the top layer, this belief, and there's sort of a general confusion in that Bloom's had three domains, the cognitive domain, which we tend to teach to, the psychomotor, which is the skills domain. We sort of have that in the syllabus, and the affective domain, this is the moralistic domain. And, of course, my analysis of it is that you should perhaps have another ethical domain, domain, and it goes back to the actual time in the 50s when this was generated, and you were looking at a large body of people, the populace, as a resource for armies and industry, and you obviously don't want too many people on the ethical domain, sort of that higher level domain. So that's just my comment on it. But this has led back to a system where this has been cookie-cutted across to teacher education originally at a certain point in time into the writing of HSE exam questions, which would have a verb which related to a... which would map to a level in the... Bloom's taxonomy domains of cognitive domain, and then that would give you a marking system. So if you an identifier would have a one mark, describe two, explain three, and critically analyze would be a six mark question. That's the way it used to be. That was in vogue in the early 2000s. It's now the actual people looking, just grinding through the feedback, have moved away from it. So this is a six mark question with a contrast, and it is no longer aligned to this constructive system of alarm, where the alarm system is you write down the identifier, and from the identifier, look, analyze it for what you have to identify, analyze it for what you have to describe, explain, and go through it. And then the idea is that you go up achieving various marks, and indeed the marking scale here is 0 to 6. It was one mark, you get a little bit of information. 6 marks is basically 6 marks if you answer the question, contrast the design of transformers and magnetic braking systems in terms of the effects that eddy currents have in these devices. And then basically there's levels of marks you can get for if you just comment on the design without contrasting them, or you don't talk about eddy currents, or things, or you don't talk about the effects and stuff like that. So let's, without further ado, go to the reverse order synthetic answer. So we'll just read from the back. The effects that eddy currents have in these devices. The effect that an eddy current has in a transformer is that it's an unwanted effect, and it creates a parasitic current within the connective core, which dissipates heat. So that effect is a heat effect. It's a waste effect, because a transformer, the object of a transformer is to transfer for energy from one circuit to another via magnetic coupling, using Lenz's law, and to create and Faraday's EMF law. I'm just going off the top of my head. This is why I'm doing this, is to get my cognitive load back so I can teach, which creates a sympathetic current. The effect in braking systems is that the eddy current in braking systems generates a magnetic field, which opposes the magnetic field applied. And so when the North Pole goes across a big plate, a flat plate, it generates a Fickerate double swirl, which for this is basically a virtual solenoid. For as the North Pole goes into a fresh P piece of conductor which no longer has a north pole. It will create an opposing magnetic field, a north pole field, by currents which sweep around and sweep into the middle of the magnet in a way such that it creates a effective electromagnet in the pure conductor. Such that a north opposes a north, and then the opposite thing will happen where the magnetic field is opposed, is being pulled away. It will generate a compensating magnetic field, a south field, and that will cause another magnet which will actually pull your magnetic field, your magnet, backwards. Now, interestingly, we'll have a little comment about whether that particular explanation, which is the correct explanation, will get the correct marks. So the effects that the currents have on the devices. The designs in a transformer to reduce that effect, they have it's either made out of a ferrite composite material. This is crushed up iron in a ceramic or in an epoxy. A little rod, such that you get the magnetic effect, but without the conduction, or you have lamination in the cores of the transformer, depending on the size of the transformer and what you are trying to do. And so this will minimise the effect. So the design of the transformer is to minimise the effect. And in magnetic braking systems, as designed, the idea is that the current. It's designed such that the eddy current is encouraged, and so you have a reasonably high conducting component, and the magnet's at close proximity, and the actual eddy current is encouraged because it has a effect. So this, and you would add in contrast. So one, it's got designs to limit it, and in contrast, the other designs is a solid high conduction material to encourage the eddy currents. And so I think that's an answer, and that would have got 6 marks. Now, where things actually differ, if you actually go, this is quite shocking to me to actually... Now, bear in mind, 2017, I was applied to be a marker, and without explanation, they said, look, we're just not going to let you be a marker. It's a principal speaking here. There are 4 points, 4 boxes which you can't tick. I was told, look, there were 4 boxes. I couldn't tick all of them. And therefore, I just couldn't let you go in. And of course, eventually I pulled up, got hold of the form weeks after, and found that the 4 boxes that he could tick, you know, he couldn't tick all of them, was whether I was a full-time, part-time, casual, or some other type of teacher. Yeah. And of course, he couldn't tick all of them because they were mutually exclusive boxes. Probably a design fault in the form. But, so this is a bit disingenuous. So I'm allowed to actually comment on this, whereas I'd be restricted if I had been actually for a question that I've actually marked. I could only write a research paper and send the research paper on it to academics and physicists and scientists in confidence, but I wouldn't be able to publish it. This is a different case. I'm not a 2017 examiner or a 2018 examiner. A similar, well, I've got no explanation for why I can't be an examiner in 2018. But the interesting thing here is in the sample answers, they don't actually go into extending the analysis of a magnet being dropped down a tube, which causes magnetic braking. So if you drop a neodymium magnet down an aluminium or copper tube, it will travel very slowly because it will induce the encroaching north pole of the magnet will induce a circulating eddy current in the opposite direction to oppose the change of flux, which is obviously to reduce a north pole. You have another north pole pushed up, and so you'll in effect get a travelling electromagnetic generated such that it produces an opposing field. All I've done is extend that general analysis, unwrap the tube into a flat plate and rotate the magnet, and then analyze what's going on there in terms of it's getting back to the phase force that it's breaking. By the by, you can actually say, well, look, the magnet is going down this gravitational potential, so it's so many joules from A to B of travelling down, mgh, but its velocity is reduced, half mv squared. The kinetic energy is not the same, so that kinetic energy has gone somewhere. It's been magnetically braked, and if you analyse it, there's a field being produced, and that has been produced as heat as a byproduct. So it's the law of conservation of energy is an explanation of what's going on. Now, the actual accepted major explanations is that magnetic braking operates by the law of conservation of energy rather than that more basic, you know, braking is to do with force. Here is a braking is a conservation of energy. You transfer energy, kinetic energy, into electrical heat energy. So this is a more derivative thing now. And this obviously excludes someone talking about the magnetic braking, which is used in a Tesla car, where the eddy current is actually siphoned off and put into a regenerative braking battery, which is obviously a magnetic form of braking. Braking here, so it's just a technical term, and so this sort of describes. So, what would have happened in 2017 if I'd been on this question? I would have written up a research paper on it for Australian scientists looking into it. So, often I will get a call from a university saying, "Look, what the heck was this particular question about? Can you explain it? Because I'm not getting any sense from the actual education department itself." And I would diplomatically go through and actually do some quite heavy research. So that some of the questions required a 20-page research paper going into the writings of Einstein and the educational theory and the educational history to explain how we, as the education system, arrived at a different point. So here we've arrived at probably two different points. One is the education of students to do the alarm system, which is an education-centric view, and possibly the other one is the analysis of magnetic braking in terms of the law of conservation of energy. It seems sort of a rather... It's true. It's a true in the full understanding, but it actually doesn't get into the actual motor effect. You're basically creating a motor which slows your little train down, or your exercise bike wheel down. You're creating just a spontaneous internal motor and looking at the forces and the shape of the eddy currents going through. This is all I have to say on this particular question. I'll do another ROSA, reverse order systematic answer, where you start at the back of the question and just work through to the contrast as a simple thing. I'll get on to that. The major point I do have is that it's the entire philosophy of at what point you introduce a answering scheme and the psychology of it. Do you discuss the answering scheme first and then teach the content and then answer to that answering scheme, or do you just teach the content and the ideas, let the students answer it, and if they're ready to offer them assistance, if they're motivated to look at the different answering schemes, the alarm and ROSA, and yet some other answering schemes. The point is, there's probably, I can think of four methodologies which are applied at different points and in different situations. The sort of King methodology, which has actually gone through universities and established and had $1 million applied to it, and as an actual fact have international adherence, or people try it in international places like America and parts of Europe and England, is the solo taxonomy, the structured observation of learning outcomes. But this is not necessarily a scheme that you would use in a final examination. This is an early career scheme. So you've got all these answering or analysis methodologies. Where and when you apply them, and do you actually sell them as a major point, and how you actually stitch it into the actual fabric and politics of the teaching scheme. So do you say, this is a qualification which qualifies me, which shows that I'm a proficient teacher against particular standards if I'm using this one? Is this an objective measure? It depends the entire framework of whether you're looking at it as sort of an academic and trying to see which framework produces the greatest, I suppose, at the end of the day, love of science, not necessarily marks, but love of science at the end of it, or how it pans out, and the environment that the teachers find themselves in. Are they allowed to actually analyse which answering method works best, or do they have to actually show that they have taught and presented and demonstrated the understanding of the primary answering method? And I suppose the other thing is that these methodologies, they don't seem to, depending on what level you are, they don't sit well in people. So if I've learnt the alarm method, which has got sort of the greatest value in terms of teacher career, are they able to understand and implement the Rose method as a general way of getting a well-structured answer, or are they able to look at the solo method? Now, the actual teachers have a limited bandwidth, and indeed the students have a limited bandwidth. If you actually teach them, here's the methodology, they're not necessarily going to experiment with other methodologies. So I hope this has been helpful for people overseas. There are techniques sitting out there, the solo technique, the Rosa technique, which I would, as teacher, say, look, this is worthwhile adopting overseas in your jurisdictions. But I would do a caveat, not with the solo technique. The solo is very well researched. The Rosa technique is something that you really should just try for yourself, reverse order a synthetic answer, and actually see whether it works for you. It's the very first thing, and then develop a academic psychometric testing, sort of control testing, like a drug. And I should mention that the Rosa technique is just a technique that I came up with. So that's a Peter Hill Rosa technique. But that being said, I'm very much not stand up on a soapbox and promote it and actually try and promote your career on it. I'm taking a more scientist viewpoint. But this is a chemical, a drug I've produced in the lab. And there's sort of a scientific disinterest, not disinterested, but scientists aren't disinterested, but they can't obviously fudge their results or use superlative language or loses credibility in the scientific community. Thanks for listening. In the meantime, keep on thinking, doing, and eventually teaching science. Once you go through all those three steps, I think you'll be a great science teacher. Good luck.